Committee will come to order. Tatiana, please call the roll.
Chair Rommel.
Here.
Vice Chair John Lombardo.
Here.
Ranking Democratic Member Escamani.
I am here.
Representatives Beltran.
Here.
Daly.
Here.
Gulf Marcel.
Here.
Gregory.
Here.
Grieco.
Here.
Harding.
Here.
Maggard.
Here.
Mariano.
Here.
McFarland excused. Nixon. Onfroy. Overdorf. Blaken. Robinson.
Here.
Toledo. Mr. President.
Thank you. Before we begin, just remind everybody in the committee or in the audience to please silence your phones or anything else that makes a noise. And committee members, before speaking, please make sure you turn your phone on. Members, welcome back to the chilly 212 Knot Room. And we had seven bills on the agenda, but without objection, we're going to show HB 1451, malt beverages, by disagreeably temporarily postponed. So for all those that are here for that or the millions watching at home, if that's your bill, you can turn the channel. Up first, we're going to have from Representative Grawl, HB 705, mergers and acquisitions. You are recognized and welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this bill requires that any entity conducting business in the state which is required to file the notification and report form for certain mergers and acquisitions pursuant to the Hart-Scott-Rodino Antitrust Improvements Act of 1976 shall provide written notice of such filing to the Office of the Attorney General at the same time that notice is filed with the federal government. That is the bill.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions for Representative Grawl? Seeing no questions, any public testimony? No public testimonies. Members, any debate? No debate. You're recognized to close.
I'll wave close.
Thank you. With Representative Grawl waving close, Tatiana, please call the roll.
Chair Rommel?
Yes.
Vice Chair John Lombardo?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Escamani?
Yes.
Representatives Beltran?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Gulf Marcel?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Harding?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
Mariana?
Yes.
McFarland excused. Nixon? Onfroy?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Blaken? Robinson?
Yes.
Toledo? Bill passed.
Thank you, members. By your vote, we'll show HB 705 report favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay. Up next, we're going to have HB 1227, Online Marketplace and Transparency, by Representative Toledo. You are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Members, before you today is the Online Marketplace Transparency Bill that seeks to stop organized retail crime. Retail businesses are increasingly targeted for theft and forced to compete against unprincipled sellers who use the anonymity of the internet to sell fraudulent and stolen goods. This has greatly increased consumer exposure to unsafe and dangerous counterfeit products. House Bill 1227, which is aligned with the federal bill, modernizes Florida statute to provide protection to our consumers so they are not buying stolen goods. The Online Marketplace Consumer Inform Act requires high-volume sellers to provide basic contact information. The bill also requires online marketplace to provide a reporting mechanism for consumers to report suspicious marketing activity, and it also includes privacy protections for small businesses and those who have home-based businesses. The enforcement will be under the Attorney General's Office through the Florida Deceptive and Unfair Trade Practices. Retailers, consumer groups, manufacturers, law enforcement, and those serious about stopping the online sale of counterfeit and stolen goods have rallied together to support the bill. That is the bill.
Thank you. Members, any questions for Representative Toledo?
No. Mr. Chair.
Representative Daley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative, for our conversation earlier. I just kind of wanted to air out a couple things. I got a couple questions for you. So my understanding is there has been, at least at the federal level, kind of a consensus bill that all the stakeholders kind of agreed to. How does it differ from this version of the legislation, and is it possible to kind of get them a little closer?
Thank you so much for...
You're recognized to explain the possible federal bill.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that question. And yes, there are some drafting errors that we will fix, hopefully in the next committee, but they're minor in nature, so we will work on getting that fixed.
Well, so it is your intent to actually mirror as much as possible that federal bill?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, absolutely.
One more, Mr. Chair, if you don't mind. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that answer. So at line, real quick, I just want to dig in and talk through a portion of this. So line 69, we talk about a business entity with an ongoing contractual relation. This would not apply to a business entity with an ongoing contractual relationship with the online marketplace to provide the online marketplace with the manufacturer, distribution, wholesaling, or fulfillment of the shipments of consumer products. Who does that actually include? Who does that encapsulate?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for that question. That is for the third party online marketplace. So anyone with a brick and mortar selling their own goods, it does not apply to them.
One more, sir. Okay. Any additional questions? Seeing no additional questions, public testimony. We have Grace Lovett from Florida Retail Federation wishing to appear in person, but I don't see Grace. So she's a proponent of the bill. Robert Blair of Walmart's waving in support. Jim Dalton from eBay. Welcome, and you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for your time. Thank you, Representative Toledo, for the ongoing discussions. We represent eBay, who just a quick fact, been around since 1995, and the first thing that was sold was a laser printer on eBay. They've come a long way, but because they've also been involved as an online site for a long time, we have very strong law enforcement provisions. We work with the Retail Federation and our retailers. As I said, we've been out, so please, Representative, add us to the list if we're serious about stopping online retail theft. There are some, we are going to get a little closer to aligning the bill, and we look forward to working with Representative Toledo on that.
Great. We appreciate you working with
us. Sure.
Thank
yes,
you
sir.
So much. Jake Farmer from Walgreens.
Waving in support of the bill.
Waving in support. Thank you, Jake. Servando Esparvana from TechNet, waving in opposition. We're going to recall Grace Lovett from Florida Retail Federation. And while we're doing that, Tracy Marinek waving in opposition. Waving in support. Just checking.
I would have corrected.
You are recognized. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's pretty bad when you're running down the hall trying to get here. I apologize. And I'm probably still breathing hard. Thank you so much, Chair Toledo, for bringing this important legislation forward. Bottom line is retailers are being stolen from every day. And it's not just the big smash and grab. It's people walking out with a shopping cart full of home goods, cosmetics. Every day this is happening. And these people are stealing to sell. And some of these online marketplaces are places to sell. And all we want to do is ask these marketplaces to verify information. These accounts are most of the time fake. And if they're forced to verify that the name and the address, the tax ID number, things like that are legit, there's nothing Those folks who are legit have nothing to worry about. So we ask you to support this bill, and I'm happy to meet with any of you or answer some questions.
Thank you for your testimony. You can catch your breath now.
Sorry.
No additional public testimony. Members were in debate. Representative Escamani.
Thank you so much, Chair. I just want to thank Rep. Toledo. You know, I do think this bill makes a lot of sense in adding more consumer protections that aren't required right now. My understanding is that some online marketplaces have protections in place, while others don't, or there's different variations of that. So I think streamlining when it comes to whatever marketplace you're using, that there's consistency there, is a positive. You know, I'm curious about the federal dynamics and just becoming closer to what I assume at a federal level, the major companies who do online sales have probably worked together to figure out that solution. And so I think it's a step in the right direction, and we have to be thoughtful to all the interactions with online marketplaces and ensuring that consumers are protected every step of the way. And so I will be voting up on the bill, and I thank you for your work on it.
Thank you. Representative Frey, you're recognized.
Thank you so very much, Chair. Representative Toledo, I have a question. What happens, like, okay, so...
We're in debate.
In debate, okay. So my concern is in regards to whether or not people like, single people like myself, I get a bunch of stuff and I would like to sell it because I don't want it. Somebody gifted me things, right? And I can't return it back to the store because I don't have a receipt. So, like, I like a website and I like to buy stuff from that website. And there are people who are single individuals who may not have a tax ID who would like to sell these things. How do we work around that? Do they give their social? You know, how do we help those people who want to make some money on the resale of their products, but they're not a small business? It just came to my mind.
Thank you, Representative Toledo. You can try to answer that in your close if you want, but any additional debate? I just want to thank you. I know this is kind of a difficult problem here between the platform companies and the retail box companies, but I know you've been working hard to make sure we have a balance between, you know, over-regulation and true consumer protection and, you know, not standing in the way of technology or some of the situation that Representative Umfroy did. So with that, I appreciate you, and you're ready to close.
Thank you, Chair Rommel, and I will address Representative Umfroy's it does not apply to someone trying to sell one item. This is for a high volume person who is in the business of doing business online. So it would not apply to you trying to sell a particular product. This bill is about what you've seen in the news with the smash and grabs. People are not being prosecuted. They are reselling those products. I don't know if you saw, I was trying to buy a PS5 for my daughter, and online I saw pictures and someone had 25 PS5s. Obviously, those products were stolen because I could only buy one at the store. I'm limited to buying one. They are selling these products online, and they're not going to the eBays or Amazons, which do a great job at combating this crime, but other smaller online marketplaces. And they're trying to hide behind the shield of we don't have to give our information, or we can create screen names and trying to sell that. And it's us that are purchasing those products. And I know we would not want to contribute to this criminal network. So that's what this bill is about. We want to make it in line so that there's not a, with the federal bill, so that there's not a patchwork of bills. And I look forward to working with my colleagues and the stakeholders to make that happen. So with that, I ask for your favorable support.
Thank you. With Representative Toledo, if I'm in close, Tatiana, please call the roll.
Chair Rommel?
Yes.
Vice Chair Gialombardo?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Escamani?
Yes.
Representatives Beltran?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Gulf Marcel?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Harding?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
Mariano?
Yes.
McFarland excused. Nixon?
Yes.
Umfroy?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Plakin? Robinson?
Yes.
Toledo?
Yes.
Bill passed.
Thank you. Members, by your vote, we will show HB 1227 reported favorably. Up next, HB 325, Vacation Rentals, by Representative Fisher. You're recognized and welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, committee members. Members, this is a simple bill related to vacation rentals. I'll explain the rest of the bill. We did hear it last year, but there are some changes to it. So I'll just start from the top and explain the bill, and then we'll get into the rest of it. Members, this vacation rentals legislation attempts to strike a balance between private property rights and local control. First and foremost, the bill provides that this act will not supersede any current or former governing document by a COA or HOA. It allows for grandfathered vacation rental ordinances to be amended to be less restrictive without affecting their validity. It also requires advertisements for vacation rentals to include the DPBR license number, as well as preempts the regulation of the advertising platforms to the state. To balance local control, this bill provides for the registration of vacation rentals by local governments, while limiting the type of information and requirements the local governments may require. It also allows vacation rentals registration programs to require a vacation rental owner or operator to obtain required tax registrations, pay all unpaid local code liens, and designate a person, a responsible person, who is available at all times to respond to complaints. To protect property owners, this legislation expedites local registration and state licensing processes by requiring local governments to accept or deny a registration application within 15 days of receipt of an application and allowing DPBR to issue temporary licenses. Local governments may also adopt parking and garbage rental requirements so long as those standards are not imposed solely on vacation rentals. To crack down on bad actors and party houses, local government can terminate a registration for violation of local registration requirements, and DPBR can revoke a state vacation rental license for violation of local registration requirements or community association property restrictions. This bill also extends the date that the advertising platforms must verify license information by DPBR to July 1st of 2022. Extending the deadline gives the department additional time to develop the verification system and ensure vacation rentals listed on the advertising platforms are actual, verified advertisements. Further, it requires advertising platforms to collect and remit sales taxes and tourism development taxes, including the merchant business taxes some jurisdictions charge instead of a tourist development tax. To ensure compliance, this legislation provides a fine of up to $1,000 per offense for violations by an advertising platform. To better protect our communities and neighbors, my legislation requires sexual predators and offenders to register if they stay in a vacation rental for 24 hours or more. It is also important to note that the current law requires 3 days or more to establish temporary residence in order to trigger the sexual predator or offender registration requirements, which I think we can all agree is simply not acceptable. Lastly, the bill authorizes the Department of Revenue to adopt rules, including emergency rules, to implement the tax reporting requirements for advertising platforms. That is the bill.
Thank you. Members, any questions? There is an amendment, so if you want to wait, but any questions as the bill is presented? Yeah, any questions?
Will we have the opportunity to ask questions once the amendment is drafted?
You will.
Adopted?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay, see no questions right now. Please present Amendment 1.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Members, this is an amendment that is very simple and straightforward. It requires a local government to waive the fine for failure to register under the Vacation Rental Registration Program if the rental becomes registered within 30 days after receiving a notice of fine and deficiency. It also clarifies that local governments cannot charge a fee for processing a registration application, except for local governments that adopted vacation rental fees on or before the effective date of this act, but those fees cannot be increased. And that is the amendment.
Thank you. Questions on the amendment? Representative Daly.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. Quick question on your amendment. So my understanding is today, if you are a grandfathered city, this would not have any impact and your amendment would have no impact. If you are a non-grandfathered city, so somebody that has something on the books post-2011, you're eligible to charge a fee. And I understand that they can keep that fee in place. If they don't, your amendment would prevent them from doing any sort of fee whatsoever. So am I correct in understanding that you expect the city to go out and do all the things that may be necessary, including the registration program that they would be permitted to have under your bill at total cost to the city?
You are recognized.
It's on or before the effective date of this bill. So if they wanted to implement something before the bill became effective, they'd be able to do that.
Sorry, so thank you. So just to clarify, so after this date, if this amendment goes into effect and this bill were to go into effect, no city that doesn't currently charge a fee for registration, if they decided they wanted to start up a registration program, they could not put any fee on that vacation rental operator and would have to eat that cost. Is that correct?
Recognize.
If they decide to not implement a fee before the bill goes into effect, they would not have the opportunity to do it.
Additional questions? No additional question? Any public testimony on the amendment? On the amendment. Tara Taggart from the Florida League of Cities. This is on the amendment. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And good morning, everyone. My name is Tara Taggart, and I represent the Florida League of Cities. Good to be back. You should have all received a letter addressing our concerns on the underlying bill, so I just want to focus my comments today on this amendment. So on the underlying bill, as Rep. Fisher addressed, it was a capping the annual registration fees at $50 per property. How this amendment changes that is essentially grandfathering in current local existing fees and prohibiting any future new programs from charging a fee for creating one. You know, we can't contemplate the future. We don't know if vacation rentals will become, you know, a bigger problem down the line. Can't think of another example where this is done. For instance, if I am a cosmetologist in the state of Florida, I pay a license and I register with the state and I renew it annually. If I had to continue to do that, but any new cosmetologist did not have to pay that fee, it would create a very unlevel playing field. Now, we think this amendment is a step in the wrong direction. Vacation rentals are only gaining popularity and local governments still have a role to play. We shouldn't be subsidizing local business at the expense of our taxpayers. You know, we don't think that local governments are charging these fees as a money grab on vacation rental owners, but we do feel we should be allowed to charge fees that justify the cost of running a program. You know, we're happy to do a rate analysis or a study as to what those fees should be. Addressing part two of this amendment, it's essentially creating a 30-day cure period for failure to register with the local registration program. You know, unlicensed activity is the biggest problem with vacation rentals right now, and I don't see how this would incentivize vacation rental owners to come into compliance if they have 30 days and then they can just go pay the same fee. You know, if I were to look at this differently, if I get a toll invoice from the state of Florida, you know, I get that fee in the mail and I'll probably get a few more notices if I don't pay it or open my mail. And after a certain period of time, that will increase because we do want people to pay those fines and fees. You know, without penalties in place, we feel this just creates a catch me if you can, and it's more of a burden on the local government. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions, but we look forward to working with Representative Fisher as we move this bill through the process.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
That's it. Members, we're in debate on the amendment. Any debate on the amendment? No debate. Without debate, we'll show that amendment adopted without objection. We are back on the bill as amended. Members, any questions now on the bill as amended? Representative Daly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do have a couple, but I'll try to be brief, and I appreciate that. Representative, couple of questions. So my understanding is if you are not a grandfathered city, today you can put restrictions around occupancy requirements of a property. Would that go away? In addition to occupancy, you can do parking requirements, which I understand you do cover in this bill. You can require pool safety information to be posted, quiet hours, even turtle safety information in a unit if a city so chooses. Does that all go away if your bill becomes law?
No.
Sure. Okay. Follow-up question, Mr. Chair.
You can absolutely have a follow-up question.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So real quick, my understanding is that DBPR does not do proactive inspections, and they only do retroactive inspections of a property when there's been a complaint filed. Is that correct?
You're recognized.
I think that's a question for DPBR, but there's no reason that they couldn't do it proactively.
ahead.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So a lot of what I noticed in your bill is we're kind of shifting away from giving local governments the opportunity to police their own communities when it comes to vacation rentals and moving that to DBPR. Do you believe, and I mean, have there been any other issues in that arena? Does DBPR have the capability of doing what you're telling them to do?
You're recognized.
In previous discussions with DBPR, I feel that I think that they have the ability to do it. And as we've discussed in the past, they can also work with local governments to kind of contract out that authority if that discretion is needed.
One more, Mr. Chair. Thanks, sir. And I've asked you this each year that I've had the ultimate pleasure to see this bill. And so I guess we talk about in this building property rights, property rights, property rights. So question, whose property rights are more important? The short-term rental owner, who, by the way, I don't know if you've heard about it, but there are actual mass like hedge funds now buying up practically city blocks and turning them into short-term rentals. So that person or the single-family owner who bought in a residential quiet neighborhood?
Everybody's property rights.
I'm sure that's not part of the bill, so if you want to get in the mind of other property owners, you can, but.
I think all property rights matter.
I like it. Okay, any additional questions? Yeah. Representative Escamani.
Thank you so much, Chair. I just have two very quick questions, Representative Fisher. I'm curious, for the $50 registration fee, where did the number come from? Why doesn't it make sense to you? Do you think that's too low? What's the origin of that number?
You can answer it, but that is addressed in the amendment.
But now it's in the heart of the bill, Chair? Is that okay? Okay.
Currently, if you're a city that charges $450, with the amendment, you can continue to charge $450. If the amendment was not there, if you were currently charging $450 and the bill passed, you would only be allowed to charge $50.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I'll move to my next question then, just to occupancy rates. My understanding is that the bill right now restricts the limit local governments to limit occupancy. One of the complaints that we hear most frequently from communities is, you know, parties being hosted in areas that are very quiet or senior citizens and so forth. So why are we preempting occupancy limits? What's the motivation for that?
You're recognized.
Well, they can still apply it as long as it applies equally across the neighborhood. They just can't target one property.
Representative Robinson.
Quick question, Representative. And I should have asked this question during the amendment process. The effective date is, and now the bill is amended, is whenever it occurs with the date the act becomes a law. I presume that's when, if this gets to the governor, this is line 47 of your amendment, when the governor signs, I presume it's when the governor signs the bill, as opposed to, you know, sometimes we have a date that is picked and put in the bill. So I just want to make sure I'm correct on that. If you have to get back with me on that, that's fine. But I think it's when the governor would sign it would be the effective date. I'm just getting confirmation.
So on line 82, section 1, effective January 1st, 2023.
Okay. Thank you.
Additional debate? No additional debate? Public testimony? Question. Thank you. Public testimony.
Public testimony. All right.
Tara Taggart. You're going to waive in opposition. Thank you. Appreciate that. Jack Corey from Jacksonville Beach. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen of the committee, I am Jack Corey, representing the city of Jacksonville Beach in Duval County today. Just a couple of points for your consideration. First, let's be clear. This bill is about a $30 billion California big tech company trying to make Florida over and make Florida like California as it pertains to vacation rentals. Please do not think that this is a coastal issue. If this is approved, California big tech will be putting vacation rentals in every county in the state. They will be having weekend dude ranch in rural counties for the country experience and for other adult-only weekends. This bill this year calls for a registration system by local governments, not a licensing system. 911 is not and should not be used for code enforcement. It limits local governments to only 15 days to process a registration. When did any state department process an application in 15 days? and it limits local governments now to zero registration fee. So therefore, your residents and the other local businesses will be subsidizing California big tech. According to last year's staff summary for the concept, DBPR news reports and California big tech's own reports, there were over 33,000 unlicensed and unregulated vacation rentals in the state of Florida, many of them owned by out-of-state and out-of-country individuals. Please protect the Florida property rights. It is estimated there are over 5 million Florida residents that have homesteaded properties. In a poll, 75% of your residents said they wanted local control of vacation rentals. But I believe Governor DeSantis said it best when he said, we have 22 million people, we are a very diverse state, and for us to be micromanaging vacation rentals, his words, not mine, I am not sure that is the right thing to do. But most importantly, it is not the right thing to do in your neighborhoods. The city of Jacksonville is very different than the city of Jacksonville Beach, Naples, Cape Coral, Orlando, or any of the other 18 communities represented on this committee. In conclusion, Mr. Chairman, as this bill moves through the process, please consider talking to the sponsor and your leadership and let this bad concept by California Big Tech preempting local constituents' control of vacation rentals in your neighborhood die again. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank questions?
You. No questions.
Thank you, sir.
Samantha Padgett, Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, good afternoon. I think we're right on the cusp there. My name is Samantha Padgett. I'm the Vice President of Government Relations and General Counsel for the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. We would like to thank you for the opportunity to share comments today and thank Representative Fisher for his willingness to receive input from all the stakeholders that are impacted by this complicated issue. We believe that this year's legislation is an excellent starting point on this issue as it includes some key provisions that we strongly support and have strongly supported for several years. This includes the required collection and remittance of taxes, providing a local vacation rental registration, requiring the advertising platform to verify and to periodically confirm the state rental the state license number before a unit is advertised, and also allowing for a vacation rental license revocation process. However, we feel there are additional provisions that should be included in order for this legislation to comprehensively address this policy area. For example, this bill preempts local advertising platform regulation without also establishing adequate state enforcement authority. There is no required quarterly reporting to DBPR and no requirement for the sharing of the physical address of the unit. You may or may not know that when you get a vacation rental license number, that number may apply up to 75 different individual units. And unless you establish the actual physical address and have a record-keeping method for that physical address and the activity taking place there, it can be very difficult to determine what activity, what vacation rental activity is taking place in a specific city or county. There are no express audit provisions. There are inadequate fines, a 15-day right to cure, and good faith immunity conditioned upon the compliance with either this bill or the advertising platform's own term of use. I think we can agree that if you are allowed as a company to set your own term of use and you're only required to, in good faith, comply with your own terms of use, that means you get to set your own rules. It also allows for a temporary vacation rental license for anybody as soon as they apply for the vacation rental license, and we feel this is something that is not necessary in this legislation. We look forward to continuing to work with the sponsor and other stakeholders moving this bill forward. And again, I do want to stress that this is a great starting point because some of these key provisions that are addressed, and this is a great foundation on which we can build. Mr. Chair, I'm happy to take any questions, and thank you for the opportunity.
All right. Thank you for your public testimony. Jennifer Green from Expedia. Welcome, and you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm here today representing Expedia Group, which is based in Seattle, Washington. There are two issues in the bill on the policy front that Expedia is interested in commenting on and is supportive of. Certainly, the legislature wants to require tax collection by third parties like advertising platforms. Certainly, we'll do that. We have voluntary collection agreements at this point with the state and also several counties. And if this if the legislature wants to regulate third-party advertising platforms and have them help enforce the regulation of vacation rentals, which of course all have to be licensed at the state level currently. That doesn't change. We've got a couple technical things that we would like to talk to. I think we've talked to the bill sponsor and others, but in terms of where you are on the policy front, on the advertising platform portion of it, we're here to be helpful. So I'm happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you, being a Seattle-based company and not just a California-based company. Thank you for your testimony.
Thanks, sir.
And members, seeing no more public testimony, we're in debate. Representative Daly.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And first and foremost, I want to thank the sponsor. You know, Representative Fisher, we have gone toe-to-toe on this bill for several years now. I can't say it's been fun, but maybe something short of fun. I do appreciate your openness and willingness to work with me and go back and forth on it. I also appreciate your offer to ironically name the bill after me if it ever made it to the floor. Candidly, I hope we don't get that opportunity. But you know, look, as far as I'm concerned, in all seriousness on the bill, the current situation, although I don't love it, between the grandfathered folks and the non-grandfathered folks, seems to be working. And candidly, I don't know that DBPR can keep up with what they have. So to continue to put more burden on them, I just think is an easy out when really it's not going to be helpful to the folks who are having issues with vacation rentals in their communities. And let me be clear, and I've said this in the past as well, I have no issue with the family who rents out a spare bedroom for a couple days a month to make some extra income. I have no issue with the little old lady who rents out the other half of her house on a short-term basis to help pay the mortgage. My issue is the proliferation of party houses. And I alluded to it in part of my questioning. I think just in the last couple weeks, I've heard about kind of hedge funds and other large organizations buying up all of these properties in coastal areas and whatnot and flipping them into and keeping them as vacation rentals. And look, I've always kind of taken issue with that, but I think this is on a whole nother level that we're just starting to see. And I think this is going to tie local government's hands even further in addressing that issue. But by and large, look, folks, when you buy a home, for example, I represent the city of Coral Springs. When I buy a home in Coral Springs, I'm buying a home in a quiet residential neighborhood. I'm getting up in the morning, I'm going to work, I'm taking my kids to school, I'm doing all of those things I didn't buy next to a party home. And I think we can all agree that if you had a party home next to yours, if you're going to vote up on this bill, you probably would reconsider the following legislative session. So my advice to the Florida League of Cities is let's take up a collection, let's buy the house next to every legislator, and we will do that and see how quickly we can change that. In all seriousness, I appreciate your effort here. I'm going to have to be down on the bill, and I hope my colleagues will do the same. Thanks, sir.
Representative Escamani.
Thank you so much, Chair. And I'm not going to be repetitive, and I appreciate Representative Fisher and trying to find those compromises. I mentioned this a little bit last session, but since she doesn't get amplified enough, and maybe it can be part of the conversation moving forward, but there is some research out there that speaks to how advertising platforms like Airbnb are certainly not the exclusive concern with affordable housing, but it's adding to a more complicated issue because you do have the example of major companies coming in or hedge funds taking supply off the market that could be rental units, but changing it to vacation units. And even in my own neighborhood, we have neighbors that had a duplex and used to rent out that duplex to a first-time renter or to a student or to a young professional. And now it's an Airbnb, which means you took that option off the market for renters. And of course, we are experiencing a huge rate hike for rent across the state. And again, it's a complicated issue, but lack of supply is one of those factors. And if we continue to seek what seems to be a deregulation by preemption to some degree compared to what local governments might have in the books, I also worry that we're continuously tying the hands of local government to try to solve the issue locally. And I know that in some cities, they'll actually use these fees to go into affordable housing trust fund locally and try to provide rental assistance and things like that. So I want to make sure those resources are available at a local level. I look forward to seeing how this bill changes as it does every session. But for today, I'm still going to be down on it. And I thank you for answering our questions. Thanks, Chair.
Representative Fisher, I think you've run this bill since me and you have been elected together, and I commend you for trying to deal with a very difficult, issue. Protecting people's private property rights, whether or not local government can enforce ordinances on people. I think you did a wonderful job here making sure that if a local government thought it was necessary to collect a fee over the last years, they can continue to do so, and still protecting everybody's private property rights. And with that, you're welcome to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I really appreciated the opportunity to be able to present the Dan Daly Act of 2022, as we'll try to amend in the next committee to make sure it's clear as it moves that that's who we'd like to honor in this process as we go along. And I appreciate all the comments today and some of the testimony. Usually, as this bill gets heard, there's a lot of public testimony. Probably all received several emails on it. And as the chairman pointed out, I've carried this bill for multiple years. I would just hope that all of you, as you think about how you voted today, think about the history of the bill and how the bill has moved along. I think in previous iterations, previous to me taking it over, there was a very ideological approach to it. And as I've taken it on, I've listened to the feedback every time it's been heard in its different committees and tried to put things in to address some of the concerns. Does it address all the concerns that everyone has? No. But I think it's moved in the right direction. Every committee stop, every year, we've made changes. Even this year, compared to last year, we added some changes based on feedback from this committee and the other committees that heard it. And so my commitment to you today is that if the bill moves forward from here, that I'll continue to work with stakeholders, I'll continue to work with future committee members to make the bill better, because that's my goal. I'm an engineer, not a super ideological person. I try to figure out a good solution and move forward with it. And so what I would ask for you today is to vote for the bill today so that we can continue the conversation and we continue to work to make it better. And with that,
thank you, Representative Fisher. Having closed the bill, Tatiana, please call the roll.
Vice Chair Joe Lombardo? Yes. Ranking Democratic Member Escamani?
No.
Representatives Beltran?
Yes.
Daly?
No.
Gulf Marcel?
No.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
No.
Harding?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
Mariano?
Yes.
McFarland excused. Nixon?
No.
Onfroy?
No.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Blaken? Robinson?
Yes.
Toledo? Chair Rommel, sorry.
Yes. Thank you, members. By your vote, we show HB 325, Vacation Rentals by Fisher, as amended, reported favorably. Thank you. Up next, HB 1233, Online Training for Private Security Orders by Representative Fine.
Thank you, and I think this will go a little bit quicker. HB 1233 is just a regulatory modernization bill relating to the training of security guards. During COVID, when we were under an emergency order, we were able to move the training of security guards online when we learned it worked just fine, except for range training, which obviously you don't want done online. This bill would allow what we were doing during COVID to be done permanently, where you could do training to become a security guard online, except for the part that has to be done on a range, and that is the bill.
Members, any questions? Seeing no questions, any public debate?
There's an amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Hold on one second. We don't have an amendment here.
Okay. Well, maybe it was not filed. Then I will do it in the next committee. I have it right here in my book, but maybe no one hit submit. It's not a controversial amendment. If
hold on, we do have an amendment.
Okay. Good. My aide's breathing a sigh of relief right now right. As she watches it.
Job security again. Okay. Go ahead, Representative.
Aide nightmare, Biden. Right?
Please present.
Particularly with me, given my kind-hearted ways. So this amendment is really a technical amendment to make sure that the right agency is overseeing the program. It makes it, we inadvertently, the bill would have changed the agency. That wasn't the intent. So that's just a technical amendment.
Members, any questions on the right amendment? No questions. Public testimony.
Chair, I'm sorry. We do have questions on the bill.
We'll get through
back to
the amendment. Then get back to the
okay,
bill.
Thank you.
Okay, no public testimony. Any debate on the amendment? Seeing no debate, show the amendment adopted without objection. We are back on the bill as amended. Questions on the bill? Representative Daly.
All right.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Representative Fine. Sorry, it's my busy day today. Two quick questions. So this bill...
I appreciated your questions on the last bill very much, so keep
Thank
going.
You, sir. I'll be brief. Just to clarify, so this would permit online training only for Class D and Class G. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Yes.
Thanks, sir.
Additional questions? Representative Escamani.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Representative Fine, for highlighting that during the pandemic, this was, you know, kind of the new norm, if you will. I was curious for the insurance policy of at least $1 million. How'd you get to that number? And who are the actual companies that provide this service? And does $1 million, you know, box out a few companies? I was curious, what does this marketplace look like if folks were offering the online training?
You're recognized.
Sure. Representative Escamani, I think what happened is the companies that were offering the training in person moved their training online because no one wanted to come to training in person. The folks that came to me to ask me to run this bill are those same entities. They said it worked really well. When these rules were created decades ago, there was no online training option. So really all we're doing is moving things into the 21st century. When the emergency order went away, that ability to continue that largely went away. So it's largely the same companies. They still have to offer in-person. They still have to have an in-person location. But many people want to take the non-shooting part of the training online. And there are certain provisions to make sure that people are actually doing it. As in many situations in the state of Florida, we have lots of vacancies and jobs, lots of jobs that need to be filled. And this will make it easier for people to get trained to become a security officer, but we're really not upsetting the apple cart here very much. We're just simply creating statutory authority to continue to do what was being done during COVID.
Go ahead, Representative Escamani.
Thank you. That's great clarity. And just speaking to those who are hiring security guards, do companies ever have a preference over an online training versus in person, or is that, do they just kind of accept any training?
And you can try to answer that.
That's not true. I used to have armed security guards. Maybe I should still, but I can tell you back when I had to do that, I didn't really ask those questions. I don't know that it was a choice. No, I'm not aware. What I do know is the people who are looking to hire security guards today cannot find them. And one of the reasons they cannot find them is we've now made it harder to get trained. Again, I would remind folks that the part of the training where you have to do on the range, if you want to be a firearms, that you're not going to be shooting your gun in your backyard, you know, holding a Zoom to make sure you do that. That will continue to be done in person. And there will be protocols to make sure that the people who are doing the training online are actually paying attention and do those kinds of things. We're literally just allowing people to do at home what they are doing, as we're seeing in so much of our workforce today. You shouldn't have to be a six-figure consultant to work from home. It's okay if a security guard can do his work at home when possible as well.
Representative Nixon.
Thank you, Chair. Hi, Rep. Fine. So I guess you kind of touched on it, but I'm just really interested because this is a job that requires people to carry guns. What type of protocols are going to be in place to guarantee that the people that are taking this online class are in fact who they say they are? Because, you know, some people, not me, if they get pulled over and they take a test, they have to take the test for their driver's license to take points off. It's not always that person.
Representative.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. So this deals with two kinds of security guards. One of the types of security guards is unarmed. So not all of this training deals with armed security guards. For the security guards that are armed, the portion relating to shooting, the part on the range, still will have to be done in person. But even for the stuff that can be done at home, it will be randomized. They will be making sure that the people who say they are doing it are actually doing it. There will be a minimum amount of time on each screen, and they will make sure by looking using cameras that the person is actually who they say they are. So there are ways, and it's being done today in other industries. We're not reinventing the wheel here, to make sure that when people are doing online. You may not know this, but during the pandemic, they came up with ways for people to take tests, like academic tests at home, where you would certainly think there would be real risks, like, oh gosh, I'm not good at algebra, so I'm going to go get my friend to come and take the test on the computer. So there are protocols to make sure, whether it's in testing or training and in any modality, whether it's this or elsewhere, there are ways to prove that the person is the person. But for the range part of the training, that still will have to be done in person. What we're talking about is the classroom portion of the training. So instead of just sitting in a classroom, you'll be able to sit at home and do it at home with protections to make sure you're actually getting the training. And again, this was done quite successfully. This is not new. This was done quite successfully during the pandemic.
We good there? Any follow? Good. Additional? Representative Scamani, I think you're going for another bite at the end.
Sorry, I just have one more question looking at the bill, and thank you, Rep. Friend, for walking us through this. If I'm reading this correctly, the instructor for the online course must work under a licensed school training facility or be employed by a business that's regulated by DOCS. That's what your amendment did, was switch DBR to DOCS. What firearm training businesses currently meet that DOCS and $1 million requirement? I guess I'm just trying to make sure that we're not just doing a bill for one specific company to get to the gist of what I'm trying to figure this out.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're not doing this for one particular company. It's actually the sort of association that represents all of these companies is who came to me to do the bill. Because they found, shockingly, COVID had a lot of bad things, but one of the things is we learned all of the things that we no longer needed to necessarily be in person for that we could do virtually. And they found that for them and for their students, it was a lot easier. Think, if you have to do 40 hours of training, if you can do it at home, it takes you 40 hours. If you have to go and do it in person in 8-hour blocks, well, that's going to take 50 or 60 hours because you got to drive up and back, and you may have to find a place for your kids and all those other kinds of issues that you have to deal with. This makes it easier for people to get these jobs, with the important part being the range component, which is a DAX rule, by the way. That still has to be done in person. We're not going to let people, shoot on Zoom.
Okay. Now we're seeing no questions. I just want to do a little housekeeping in case I was negligent.
Is my aide in trouble?
No, you're not in trouble. But I want to just make sure that we know that amendment number one was adopted without objection, and we are good to go there, just to make that official. Members, so we're done with questions on the bill and the amendment. Do we have any public testimony on the bill that was amended without objection? We have Cynthia Henderson from FASCO. Thank you. Waving in support. Amanda Frazier from G4S Security. Waving in support. Thank you. Members, we are now in debate on the bill. Representative Daly.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and I'll be brief. And Representative, we didn't have a chance to connect, but I'd like to come see you. I certainly have no issue with the Class D performance online, and I have no issue with portions of the Class G training being online. Certainly understand what you're trying to do and appreciate that. Thanks to another bill that we have up today, and Representative Byrd, I have the requirements for a Class G statewide firearm license, and wanted to kind of touch on that real quick. So in terms of the legal aspects and use of firearms, which is about 12 hours, certainly I agree that's something that can be done online. There's another portion that is supposed to be 8 to 11 hours. That's the operational firearms safety and firearms mechanical training portion. A portion of that training includes teaching the mechanical operations of a firearm and how to safely handle firearms. I would prefer, if it's possible, to move that under the range portion. If you'd be open to that, certainly could support it. And then obviously, as you've already mentioned multiple times, the firearms qualification portion would be in person. Certainly agree with you on that. So I will be a very small no today, but I'd like to work with you because I think I can get there. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Goff-Morsell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative. I too appreciate having the course online, and at first I was very hesitant of the bill because I thought it was a bill that was going to lessen requirements, and I'm satisfied that that's not what it is, but Rep. Taylor bringing up that one little issue is also a concern for me, so I'm going to also be a soft no because of that issue that Rep. Daly just brought up. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Nixon. You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for this, the attempt of what you tried to do with this bill, Rep. Fine, in regards to kind of opening up and allowing more people to gain access to employment through it. However, I reached out to someone that I know who owns a security company, and his response back to me in regards to this bill was he's not really a huge fan because there are far too many security guards that aren't receiving enough training as it is, and without in-person classes, he feels that that's going to lower the quality of work. And so for that reason alone, I'm really hesitant, and I'm just going to vote no today. So if we can work a few things out, like Representative Daly said, I could possibly be up on it in the Commerce Committee. Thank you.
Representative Umfroy.
Thank you so very much, Chair. Representative Fine, I am grateful that you looked at making this take place in this format continuously, because I feel like it will give more people access to becoming security guards. I do hear my colleagues' concerns in reference to some of the things that are brought up, and I know that you are the type of gentleman who will look at them and address them if you see fit. I thank you very much for this legislation, and I look forward to supporting it.
Representative Greco.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to be up on the bill from personal experience and some of the work that I do. I know that statewide and definitely in South Florida, we are experiencing a shortage of security guards, and I know that we're having a tough time staffing a lot of the condos and a lot of other buildings. And for that, I'm going to be up on it. And I know that it's not the sponsor's intent to create any sort of unsafe scenarios. So with that, I'll be up. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Vice Chair G. Lombardo.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Rep, for bringing this good bill. I used to be in this space. We used to have a security company, and it is very difficult not just to find security guards, but even to find schools. A lot of the schools in the state of Florida are smaller owned mom and pop type companies that provide this security training. And now this gives somebody from my district, Cape Coral, access to somebody on the other coast of Florida to be able to go through a training program and only have to show up for the G license portion of the firearms. So I think this is a great bill. I think that this is going to be something that we're going to have to continue to do for a lot of different industries and a lot of different licensing process. And in the licensing process, I mean, you get fingerprints. It's not just a, hey, here's your license. You did 40 hours. So there is a big process for it, and there's background checks and all that. FDLE gets involved. So there is already a pretty extensive process for it. So I appreciate this. Thank you.
Representative Escamani.
Thanks so much, Chair. I actually agree that, you know, I think the effort to make this available online is positive and really good. I do agree with Rep. Daly on some of the points around other parts of the training that might still benefit from being in person, especially just the safety of the firearm. I know you can have a PowerPoint presentation and try to hold the firearm with that, but I feel like there might be a benefit to the Class G training for some of it to be in person. The only thing I just want to learn more about, and I appreciate your answer up fine, is I am curious how many firearm training businesses meet the DOCS $1 million requirement, because as you said, Vice Chair, I agree with you that this could be an opportunity for small businesses, but I just don't know if every small business fits under this criteria of DOCS and 1 million. And I just want to make sure that they do, because if they don't, we should maybe consider lowering the threshold so those small businesses can participate online. Because if they don't meet that threshold, they might not be able to do so. So for those reasons, I'll be a no on the bill today, but I hope I can change that. Thanks, Rep. Fine.
Well, Representative Fine, you kind of promised in the beginning this would be shorter than a vacation rental bill. Right now, you're 90 seconds over. And if you're counting votes, we just looked it up, soft no's count as a no. So with that, you're recognized to close.
Thank you. And I was hoping to waive close, but unfortunately, I'm not able to. A couple of points. No opposition has been expressed to me by any groups at this point with the bill. My door remains open. I mean, generally with my bills, I'm open to work product. I've not heard any until I have been here. I find many of my colleagues in the minority's perspective and concerns about how Commissioner Freed ran her department during COVID to be noteworthy, because this is how she did it during the COVID emergency. And I think that that's something that we all have to think about. Maybe she made mistakes. And I promise you, because of your concerns, I will take that back and we will look at how she ran the department then. But I did this because I thought during COVID there weren't any issues. I hadn't heard any. And you've brought up real concerns with how she did it. And I'll look at that. But what got me to run this bill, this isn't an issue that I work with very, very big. What got me to run this bill is a concern that COVID has led to a large degree to two Americas. And there is an America of the elites, of the lawyers who can work at home, and the consultants who can work at home, and the college professors who can work at home, but the waiters who can't work at home, and the security guards who can't work at home, and the regular folks who can't work at home. So we've allowed that. We see it in restaurants where we don't have to wear masks, but the employees do. And I don't like that because we're all Americans. And so I, when this presented to me, I thought, here is an opportunity for positions that are not six-figure positions, that are not lawyers and consultants and college professors, for regular folks to make it easier for them to get a job where there are tons of opportunities, where they don't have to figure out how they're going to have to get childcare, where they don't have to figure out how they're going to get to the training. They can do it at home. If we say that we fight for the little guy, then when we have opportunities to make it easier for the little guy to get a good job, we should take that opportunity. And with that, I ask for your favorable support.
Thank you. With Representative Fine having closed the bill, Tatiana, please call the roll.
Vice Chair Joe Lombardo?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Escamani?
No.
Representatives Beltran?
Yes.
Daley?
No.
Gulf Marcel?
No.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Harding?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
Mariano?
Yes.
McFarland excused. Nixon?
No.
Onfroy?
Strong, yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Blaken? Robinson?
Yes.
Toledo? Yes. Chair Rommel?
Yes.
Bill passed.
Members, by your vote, we shall HB 1233 reported favorably. I know Representative Byrd's got to get back to the committee, so HB 1509, Private Investigation and Security Services. You are recognized.
Good afternoon, members. Now that Representative Fine has warmed you up on private investigators and security guards, I'll follow up. HB 1509, under current law, investigators and security guards are regulated and licensed under Florida law. Although they perform different tasks, if either one carries a firearm while working, they are currently required to have a state-issued G firearms license. This bill will allow private investigators with a Florida CWL to carry a firearm while working. The bill also allows private investigators who are retired law enforcement officers with a LEOSA card, and let me briefly touch on what a LEOSA card is. LEOSA stands for the Law Enforcement Officer Safety Act. It is a United States federal law enacted in 2004 that allows two classes of persons, the qualified law enforcement officer and the qualified retired or separated law enforcement officer, to carry a concealed firearm in any jurisdiction in the United States, regardless of state or local laws. And I would just remind the members of the minority party that President Obama in 2013 reauthorized and modernized that law, so it has bipartisan support at the federal level. The bill also allows active LEO, so these are current law enforcement officers whose agencies allow them to work off duty as private investigators, to carry a firearm while working. The bill does not affect armed security guards, only private investigators. That's the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Members, are there questions of Representative Byrd?
Question.
Representative Daley.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Byrd. I'll be brief. You've heard in the last debate kind of an outline of the requirements for a Class G license, but I want to hone in on that a little bit. A Class G statewide firearms license requires a person to demonstrate proficiency with a firearm through several exercises at a range, including obtaining scores in target practice. What are the firearms proficiency requirements for a concealed weapons license?
Stole my question.
So those... Thank you, Chairman. Those are outlined in Chapter 790, so they are less. But I would point out that one of the interesting things is that any employer other than someone required under current law to have a G license, any employee in the state of Florida whose employer allows them can carry a firearm concealed at their workplace with a CWL. And one of the things that this bill is trying to achieve is that, say, for example, Representative Grieco, who's a criminal defense lawyer, hires a private investigator and they want to go out and talk to a witness. Representative Grieco, if he has a CWL, could carry a firearm with him, but the private investigator that he is hired to assist him could not under current law. So this, under Section B1, is just trying to clarify that loophole, or that I don't think that private investigators actually ever should have been under a G license. but it's just trying to ensure that they're not to have those added requirements that we want the Social Security guards to have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative, for that answer. One more quick question. A Class G statewide firearms license also requires 4 hours of annual requalification with a firearm. What is the annual requalification requirement for a concealed weapons license?
There is not an annual requalification for a CWL.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you. Representative Greco, you're recognized, and please try to ask questions that you don't know the answer to.
he knows the answer to everything.
Well, Representative Byrd, thank you. That pitch that you just made was an absolute home run. And I'm gonna throw you a few softballs and maybe a couple curveballs. We'll see. But,
that's what you guys did last night.
Yes. I want to go back to Representative Daley's questioning and kind of see if we can educate the group here. You said that there's a lesser requirement for a concealed weapons permit. Can you be a little bit more specific for the range requirements for a concealed weapons permit? And you know, let's be clear as to
sure.
how low the right. requirements are.
No. Granted, I mean it's literally you can fire one round at the range and that would qualify for a CWL.
Follow up. And there's, I want to, thank you, Mr. Chair. The issue here regarding reducing the requirements for uniforms under, I guess, a Class D license, can you kind of explain that piece of it here?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. Can you direct me to the part of the bill you're talking
down
about?
Down here, starting at line 52. And going 52 to 59.
So Class D licensees, which are security officers, are authorized to carry a concealed firearm under 493.6115 and are performing limited special assignment duties. Well, that's already an existing law. So I'm sorry, what is your question again?
So it talks about the requirement to wear uniforms and how there are now changes in the exceptions for the requirement to wear uniforms based upon the class of license that you have. And I'm trying to understand the legislative intent and or the policy intent behind those changes.
You're recognized, you tried to.
Thank you. I mean, I think it's cleanup, but I'll certainly, you know, take a deeper dive in there, and I want to go back and look at 493.6115 and just, and can work with you on that if there's a specific problem with it.
Thank you. Nothing further.
Good. Thank you. Additional questions? Representative Escamani.
Thanks so much, Chair. Hey, Rip Byrd. There's actually a part that I needed some clarity on with Doc said there was some sort of concern about conflicts of interest when an active police officer carries a concealed weapon while working as a PI or a security guard. And apparently there's a Florida Commission on Ethics opinion about this, saying that the situation can lead to a conflict between the cop's private interests and their public duties. And I just was a little confused by that opinion, but I was wondering if you read it or had any like feedback to share on elaborating what is that potential conflict of interest of an active police officer carrying a concealed weapon while working as a PI or security guard, and what the Ethics of Commission might be trying to insinuate with that.
You're recognized to give your opinion sure. on someone else's opinion.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Representative Escamani. I have not read that ethics opinion. I'd be more than happy if you want to provide it to me to read it. But, you know, my understanding is that there's very few law enforcement agencies in Florida that allow their current law enforcement officers to also work off duty as PIs. So, you know, some may feel that presents a conflict because law enforcement officers are always kind of technically on duty. But more than happy to read it and follow up with you on that. But I don't know that it has any bearing on the bill.
Go ahead.
Just one last question that, again, I want to be repetitive, but, is there any, my understanding is that the change that we're making also does just reduce the need for that actual proficiency of a firearm in when it comes to accuracy. And so I'm just curious if you feel like your bill, since we're changing some of these requirements, is it in the public's best interest to reduce some of these training requirements with the shift that you're making?
Correct.
Sure, and I appreciate the question, and let's be very clear. So we have the under Section B1, the Class C license, which is a private investigator. Those are people who typically just go out and either watch other people or talk to other people. They would be able to carry a CWA, or they would be able to carry a firearm with a concealed weapons license. Under Sections 2 and 3 of the bill, we're talking about retired law enforcement officers with at least 10 years on the job and annual firearms training and have a LEOSA card under the federal law, or current licensed law enforcement officers. So I don't think there's any reduction in training. It's only for that very limited Class C individual. And I would also point out that our state attorneys can carry firearms with a CWL. So they're doing the exact same thing. Our state attorneys are going out, talking to witnesses, maybe at night, maybe in, you know, more crime areas of town, and that we're allowing them to do that. This is allowing that private investigator, because there's really not a rational basis to separate and say, well, you're a PI, you can't do that, but anybody else can. I mean, literally any other employee in the state of Florida, if they have a CWL and their employer allows them, can carry a firearm concealed. It just doesn't seem, with respect to those, that very narrow area of the private investigators, that they should be treated differently.
Seeing no additional questions, public testimony. Barney Bishop, Florida Associate of Private Investigators. You're recognized.
Barney Bishop with the Florida Association of Private Investigators. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Chairman Byrd, for bringing this very good bill. First, I want to tell you that I'm a former licensed private investigator before most of y'all were born, but I was nevertheless for 10 years a private eye. And I have the pleasure now of representing this association that I used to be the president of in 1980. So this is a good bill. No private investigator lost any constitutional right when they became a private eye if they got a CWL. And it's valid. They have no less constitutional right than me as a non-licensed private investigator today with the CWL have the ability to carry that weapon. The electrician that came to fix my house a couple of weeks ago got to talking about CWLs while we were talking about guns because he saw some dead animals in my house. He was carrying a concealed weapon. So anybody can be carrying a concealed weapon whatsoever. It's important to understand that the Division of Licensing has decided that if I am a licensed private investigator and if I have a CWL, that I can carry that weapon concealed to the movies. I can carry it concealed to the grocery store. I can carry it concealed with my children to the park. But for some nonsensical reason, I can't carry it when I need it the most, when I'm working as a private investigator. That doesn't make sense. That's an abridgment of my constitutional rights, and private investigators are not second-class citizens. I will tell you that I've Googled this extensively and cannot find an instance in which a private investigator has shot anyone in the state of Florida. If they have a Class G license, the gun license, they're required to report if they ever discharge or fire their weapon. We can't find any record of a private investigator ever discharging their weapon. So, representatives, this is a good bill. It makes common sense. Give the private investigators, just like any other profession, the right to carry a weapon while they're working. And I'd be glad to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for your testimony. I appreciate it. Ari Moore from Friends of Association of Private Investigators. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much, Chairman Byrd, for presenting this bill. I am Ari Morris. I'm in Daytona Beach. I have a private investigative agency called Locators International that's been in business since before I was born in 1972. My uncle and I have been private investigators for some time, and I will tell you a brief story of one of the reasons why this bill came about, and we brought it to to Chairman Byrd. I'm also a past president of the Florida Association of Private Investigators, but more importantly, and I serve on the advisory council to the Department of Agriculture's Division of Licensing on their PIRSEC. But one of the things that I think is important is to apply for applicability, and that is, years ago, I was working on an estate matter with Airship. I was trying to find a homeless man who was involved in a case who was actually to inherit money. In that case already in South Florida, there were two murders involved. I was coming outside of a co-op, and I was met with a gentleman who put a gun in my face with a stack of flyers that said, "Missing, have you found this?" And I was robbed at gunpoint. My wallet, my car keys, everything I own. So I bring this because I did not have a G license. I could not carry a weapon to protect myself. So I implore you to support this bill, because private investigators, if a plumber coming to your home or an electrician or an attorney going out to take a witness statement, the private investigator should also be able to have that same opportunity. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Amanda Frazee from G4S Security waving in support again. Thank you. Members, we are in debate. Representative Daly.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative. And I appreciate the time and the conversation we've had here. You know, look, there are certain provisions of this bill I agree with as it relates to, and I think I agree with Representative Grieco as well, as it relates to those with former law enforcement or current law enforcement or prior military. I get there. I think for me, it's an issue of training. And I don't view training or additional training or even redundant training as a bad thing. You know, my concern is lowering certain requirements, and I do not find the concealed carry, you know, training to be ultimately sufficient for somebody that's holding themselves out into that space. So I agree with your example that you provided with Representative Grieco, and the example that he can carry, but somebody, you know, private investigator can't, and all he needs is a concealed carry. So maybe we agree that we need additional training for concealed carry, which is an amendment that I would love to see at the next stop. But with that, and for those reasons, I'm going to be down today, but I appreciate the conversation.
Sure. Representative Grieco.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to be clear, I'm going to be down on the bill, and it's not because I'm down on everything in the bill. I look at firearms legislation the way I look at legislation about, say, airline pilots. You know, usually with other types of bills, perfection is the enemy of good. But I think when we're talking about firearms and airplanes, there's you have to be perfect. And I don't think it's perfect. And kind of the point I made about concealed weapons permits. I remember when I was a prosecutor, and to be clear also that at least in the Miami-Dade State Attorney's Office, if you wanted to carry. An assistant state attorney is a sworn law enforcement officer. If you wanted to carry in your capacity as a prosecutor, you had to go through a completely different level of training. It was not simply a concealed weapons permit. And whether or not that's statutory, some state's attorneys may not look at the law the same way, but I agree with that. If you're going to be going out and doing law enforcement work in any capacity, I think that you should have a higher level of training for multiple reasons. But the concealed weapons permit range training, as the sponsor described, is you literally walk up, pick up a gun, fire it. It doesn't matter how accurate you are. You put the gun down, and then you get a high five, and you get your concealed weapons permit. I mean, that's essentially it. That is the bottom requirement here in Florida. I think that if you are a private investigator, and you're going to be carrying a firearm, and not the law enforcement piece of it, like the former cops and everybody else, but if you're a PI and you're going to be carrying a firearm in your duties, I think that you should have some higher level of training. And even Mr. Bishop made a comment that there have been no shootings. Well, that's good. That's a good statistic. And I don't think that we should be lowering the requirements or standards. We should be embracing the fact that we are already in our sweet spot where we haven't had a problem. It's kind of like a road that's had no car accidents. We're not going to increase the speed limit just because there's been no car accidents. So with that, I'm going to be down on the bill. I'm probably down on about 25% of it. I mean, probably a ratio of about 14 to 2. Thank you.
Representative Byrd, I appreciate bringing this bill forward. We have, there's millions of Floridians that have their concealed weapons permit, and it seems like it's by accident or on purpose, for some reason, we were discriminated against people that are private investigators, that we didn't give them the same right, constitutional right, to protect themselves and everybody else. And with that, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Chairman, and I will adopt your statement as my close. Thank you.
With that, Representative Byrd having closed, and Brother Tatiana, please call the roll.
Vice Chair General Lombardo?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Scamani?
No.
Representatives Beltran?
Yes.
Daly?
No.
Wolf Marcel?
No.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Respectfully, no.
Harding?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
Mariano? Yes. McFarland excused. Nixon?
No.
Onfroy?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Blaken? Robinson?
Yes.
Toledo? Chair Rommel?
Yes.
Bill passed.
Members, by revote, we will show HB for 1509, Private Investigators and Security Service by Byrd, reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you, Chairman.
And up next is PCS for HB 577, Tenant Safety, by Representative Bardeman. Thank you for being so patient. I didn't know that Representative Fine Bill was going to take us so long.
It was very exciting to watch, Chair. Thank you.
You're recognized.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Chair Rommel, Vice Chair G. Lombardo, and Ranking Member Escamani for allowing me to present this bill. Mia Marcono was a 19-year-old college student from Pembroke Pines. She actually went to Flanagan High School. She was tragically killed in her apartment in September of last year. Police believe the killer was a maintenance worker employed by the apartment, who, despite having a criminal record, which we now know had felony charges on it, was able to attain a master key to gain access to the apartment. Following her tragic death, Senator Stewart and I worked with the Mia Marcono Foundation and Mia's family to provide tenants with necessary protections to ensure that a tragedy like this never happens again. PCS for House Bill 577, named Mia's Law, strengthens requirements regarding access to individual units, increasing the required notice from 12 hours to 24 hours. In extending the time of reasonable notice, tenants will have a greater awareness as to when someone enters their home. Mia's parents, like all parents who have their children in rental apartments, had the expectation that Mia would be safe and come home. Mia's law would extend a greater sense of personal security and safety in the homes of over 2 million renters in our state. Thank you, Chair Rommel, for entertaining my numerous conversations, answering the phone late at night, and putting this bill on the agenda. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Members, any questions? Representative Omfroy.
Thank you very much, Chair. Representative, I have a question in regards to how does this address the situation that took place with Mia Marcono? We're discussing giving notice. The person who entered her home was not entering because there was a notice given in the first place. So I'm for this law, but I would like to understand how it addresses the particular situation in regards to Mia Marcono.
So, thank you, Chair. So the bill as written did have three components to address this law. As you know, this is a legislative process. This is my first committee stop. We're going to continue to work through the process to address all of the issues. However, there are over 700 bills. There are only a fraction of those bills that are heard in committee and a fraction of those bills that become law. So as you move through the process and you work with the committee staff, you focus on what you can work with now. There are two other committees. It is moving through the Senate and passing unanimously. And Mia's family will be here next week if you would like to speak with them. So this is the first start in ensuring tenant safety. And as we go through this process, as everyone knows, this bill can come out with even stronger language. Thank you, Chair.
Representative Umfroy, you.
Thank you very much for the follow-up, Chair. Representative, I appreciate the legislation that you put forward. However, this legislation does not address the issue that took place with Mayor McCardo. I understand what you're doing with it, and your legislation makes sense. But with you to tell me that this is a process of 720 bills, I understand that. My question to you is, does your bill address the situation that took place with Mia Mercado?
Yes, this drill addresses one of the three original provisions that I put in the original bill. So we will continue to work through this process. So this is one of the three. Thank you.
Additional questions? Any public testimony? No public testimony. Members, we are in debate. Representative Escamani.
Thank you so much, Chair Rummel. I want to thank you, Representative Bartleman. This is very close to home for us in Central Florida. As you know, Mia was murdered in Orlando, and there has been an incredible rallying cry to honor her life through action. We know this is a process that we have to trust, and I know that you are so focused on getting this into the finish line and working very closely with the family, navigating this process to get a product that is going to not only honor her, but save lives. And I think there are so many additional parts we want to see in any policy, including this one. But I am very hopeful that as you shepherd this forward and we continue to talk to all stakeholders, including the family, that we'll be able to find the right combination of safety measures to help protect all of our student renters, all of our renters, in the face of something so tragic. And so I know it's not easy to carry a bill like this. There's a lot of weight on your shoulders as you do it. But I thank you for that. And I'm very hopeful that the final product will be one that we'll be able to see on the floor and all support together.
Representative Daly.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Representative, thank you for bringing this. I know how hard you've been working on it and over the last couple months, and you're shepherding it through the process and doing a hell of a heck of a job. So thank you for that, and I'll be proud to support it today and hopefully on the floor.
Thank you.
Representative Nixon.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Balderman, I just want to thank you for this bill. You know, my daughter is about to get ready to go to college soon, and I just really appreciate the thought that you have taken into this bill. And like Rep. Escamani stated, you know, it is a process, and I know it's going to get better, but I'm grateful because I know this is a step in the right direction to ensuring my daughter's safety and all kids' safety who are, you know, in college and renting as well. So good job. Thank you for this.
Representative Umfroy.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm going to support your legislation today because I believe it deals with something that needs to be dealt with. My concern and my issue is it doesn't get to the root of what needs to take place to ensure that our children are taken care of. And I hear my colleagues congratulating you on ushering in. I congratulate you also. However, my concern is what took place with Mia. The reason why this bill is named after her is not being addressed in the root of that. And I don't know if my colleagues in leadership have made it harder for you to be able to do this, but I would love to know how we can strengthen this law to make sure it actually gets at the root of what it's supposed to do. And that's what I have to say. I will support this legislation. It's gonna be a soft yes, because I believe we can do better.
Representative Mariano.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative, for bringing this bill. I know you're working very hard on this issue, and what you're doing for the family is very noble, and hope to see you get over the finish line. You know, I've lived in apartments, and there have been situations where I can tell someone's been in my apartment. I never got notice, and I have no idea who was in my apartment. And, you know, at the time, as a single woman, it's scary to not know if there is any process to check those people that have those keys. I would love to see the background check eventually find a way to get into this bill, whether that's through the Senate or whatever it may be. You know, I think that what you're doing is very important. And as someone that's been in that situation, obviously did not have the anywhere near as troubling of an outcome as what the family's been dealing with. You know, I think it's very important what you're doing, and I think this is a great first step.
Thank you.
Representative Bartleman, seeing no more debate, I believe, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Yes. This bill is about protecting 2 million tenants. Does it have all of the components of the original bill at this point? No. Is it moving? Are there discussions? Yes. We know what outcome we want to get to. Everyone who is on this committee understands this process, understands how it works. And I need to thank Chair Rommel for working through this with me and all of these discussions and getting me to this committee bill and everything you're doing to help. And I am hoping, like every person who's been on in this podium, that when it's not exactly where you want it, that you're going to keep working and you're going to keep moving, and there are other committees. And by the way, there's another house. The Senate is going through there as well. So what I can do is do everything I can for this family, and this is the first step. I also have a 19-year-old daughter who is in an apartment in Gainesville. My heart breaks for this family, and we're going to move this bill forward, and we will continue to work with leadership to get this bill where everyone is happy with it. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Bartleman, having closed on the PCS, Tatiana, please call the roll.
Vice Chair Joe Lombardo?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Scamani?
Yes.
Representatives Beltran?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Gulf Marcel?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Harding?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
Mariana?
Yes.
Mark Farland excused. Nixon?
Strong, yes.
Onfroy?
Peaceful, no. Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Plakin? Robinson?
Yes.
Toledo?
Yes.
Chair Rommel?
Yes.
Bill passed.
Members, by revote, we show PCS for HB 57 Senate. 577, Tenant Safety by Bartleman, report favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right, members, we have concluded our work for today, and without objection, Representative Daly moves, we rise, and we are adjourned.